You shall be called the repairer of the breach, restorer of streets living. When I sat down to wrestle with scripture this week, I could not unread what I had read about a boat that appeared on the horizon 400 years ago in August of 1619. Carrying the first 20 slaves, or 30, from Africa to a coastal port in the British colony of Virginia. I could not unread what I had read of the next 250 years of chattel slavery, and of a war fought to preserve an economic system dependent upon equating human beings property to be mortgaged, traded, bought, sold, used as collateral, given as a gift, and disposed of violently. I could not unread what I had read of the great nadir, the second slavery, following the period of our history known as Reconstruction. Of Plessy v. Ferguson in 1896 that declared racial segregation from cradle to grave constitutional. Of burning crosses and lynchings, of attack dogs and fire hoses, and four little girls killed in a church in Birmingham on Sunday. I cannot unread what I first read as a sophomore in high school of the Civil Rights Act and unremember the history I have lived since then, and so cannot stop wondering whether the work of healing the world of racial injustice begun in my lifetime will be reversed. I cannot forget for an hour on Sunday morning, what I know of a nation spending exponentially more incarcerating young black men than educating them. Of a nation more and more made sick by the hatred that is white nationalism, three hate-based mass shooters stopped by remarkable law enforcement officers since El Paso and Dayton. A political system doing everything it can to hold on to white hegemony. Yet, like Austin last Sunday, I'm aware that reading and remembering these things on a Sunday morning in the sanctuary is likely no less welcome now than it was in late 6th century BC Israel. In early 1st century AD Palestine. Then as now, Sunday was for religious ritual, for prayer, for God talk, for rest, and not given to the hard work of thinking together for Christ's sake about how we might begin to heal the world we have broken. Isaiah and Jesus beg to differ about Sunday morning, and for that reason, so much more. I think it not by chance that the lectionary readings throughout my last summer of preaching have made us do business with the words of justice-crazed prophets and of a pretty irritated Jesus. Here in Isaiah's words were first addressed to a divided and disgruntled gathering of returned exiles. No longer slaves under Babylonian rule, they took the occasion of their freedom to double down on their observance of the law so as to reclaim their identity social relations and commerce under the dominion of ruthless and self-serving exploitation. The prophet reaffirms the classical understanding of righteousness that grew out of the experience of God's liberating slaves from their bondage, feeding them in the wilderness, and giving them a homeland of their own. I cannot unread what I read this week. It is a plea to reclaim authentic humanity by replacing cold, calculating self-interest with acts of loving kindness that restore genuine communal solidarity. In sum, the prophet's response to Israel's behavior is twofold. First, they must heal the broken relationships within the social order, loose the bonds of injustice, and undo the thongs of the yoke, let the oppressed go free and break every yoke. And second, they must heal their relationship with God. Stop trampling the Sabbath and pursuing their own affairs on God's holy day. Then says the prophet, your ancient ruins shall be rebuilt. You shall raise up the foundations of many generations. You shall be called the repairer of the breach, the restorer of streets to live in. In Hebrew, the words repairer of the breach are tikkun olam. Tikkun olam. The practice of tikkun olam has its origins in the medieval mystical tradition of Judaism known as Kabbalah. Its creation myth goes like this. When God decided to make room for creation, God first drew in his breath, contracting himself. From that contraction, darkness was created. And when God said, let there be light, the light that came into being filled the darkness, and vessels came forth, each filled with primordial light. But the vessels were too fragile to contain such a powerful divine light. They broke open, split asunder, and all the holy sparks were scattered like sand, like seeds, like stars. Those sparks fell everywhere. That is why God's people were created, to gather the sparks, no matter where they are hidden. And when enough holy sparks of light have been gathered, the broken vessels will be restored, and tikkun olam, the repair of the world, awaited so long, will finally be complete. If we are to be repairers of the breach today, if we are to live by the light of the biblical narrative, writes Rabbi Shammai Helm, Shabbat cannot be separated from social justice. The Bible's most fundamental commandments effectively erase this distinction, he says. Since after all, how we treat others is, in a sense, how we treat God. Specifically, the God who brought the world into being and redeemed God's people from slavery is the God who charged God's people to observe the Sabbath. Why? So that their slaves will bear saying to Moses, why are you taking the people away from their work? Get to your labors. Now they are more numerous than the people of the land. And yet you want them to stop working. The word Pharaoh uses for ceasing labor has the same root as Sabbath. Thus it is that the Egyptian desert, in every act of refusing to grant dignity to his workers, ironically introduces the notion of Shabbat that God will soon endorse. Social reform and Sabbath observance share a common religious ethical vision. Receiving God's light is one that recognizes the inestimable value of every human being, even and especially the vulnerable and downtrodden. So it was that on that Sabbath, when Jesus was teaching in one of the synagogues, a vulnerable and downtrodden woman appeared in the sanctuary, and over by a spirit that had crippled her for 18 years, Jesus sees her, calls her over, and unbinds her from whatever was bowing her down. The leader of the synagogue is indignant, and technically, he was right. By the beginning of the first century, Sabbath laws prohibited minor cures in situations where life was not threatened. The sun would set soon enough. Other interpreters say Jesus was not healing the woman, but unbinding her from a spirit that enslaved her. I cannot agree. Ought not this woman, no less than a bound animal, be set free? Jesus asks, after making a rabbinical argument from lesser to greater. Ought not this daughter of Abraham, whom Satan bound for 18 long years, be unbound from this bondage on the Sabbath day? Is this not the fast I choose, roars the Lord in 3rd Isaiah, to loose the bonds of injustice, to undo the yoke, to let the oppressed go free and break every yoke? Instead that the Sabbath was established in part so that slaves would be given rest, should this not be the hour, every week, when the work of healing the world of racial injustice is plotted in earnest? Missing from 1619 is any article about worship and the work of healing the world among slaves in those first 250 years of the nation's history. If you read the statements recorded by the WPA in 1934 about the religious practices of slaves in England, you learn that at most, slaves in this country were given one Sabbath in the white man's church each month. There, according to William Moore, a slave in Alabama and Texas, a white preacher allows us to obey our masters and work hard and sin, and when we die, go to heaven. Marcia Tom didn't mind us sitting in our cabins at night, but we better not let him touch us praying. Seems like we just got to pray. Half a life, am I in prayer? Some day first place, healing among soils happened in the context of a story, a social narrative, a spiritual world. For instance, when a particularly cruel slaveholder died suddenly of smallpox, the slave community understood the sacred meaning of his death through God's plagues against Pharaoh. Understood the moral meaning of his death because sins were punished, and understood the healing power of his death to be the liberation from his hatred. Imagine if Scripture, and not Fox News or MSNBC or Russian bots, interpreted our take on the world we are given to heal. In the second place, healing happened in the context of a community. Instead of isolating a sick person, the community gathered around the sick bed. This kind of gathering was ritualistic on plantations due to the incessant violence in the labor system. They were always, always gathered around wounded people. After Solomon Northrop was severely beaten, he lay in bed bleeding and unable to move. At the end of the day, people gathered around him and brought him bacon and coffee and consolation. Imagine if binding the wounds of this violent society became the context for our common humanity. In the third place, prayer. Prayer empowered slaves and formed a foundation for resistance. Worship, story, ritual, the communal sickbed, and prayer became a place, a strategy for liberation. What if prayer empowered the church to resist the oppressive and unjust systems of our day? The work of healing the world begins with the healing that happens when the words of justice-praised prophets and a pretty irritated Jesus are not unread. When a community gathers around the broken lives of those who have borne the yoke of society's violence with bacon and coffee, in consolation. When our worship of God forms us and reforms us and frees us to fix our eyes on the horizon of God's future and on Him whose yoke is easy and whose burden is light. Thanks be to God.